you know, they're trying to be in creative ways to find the talent. Obviously, they're reaching out to recruiting firms and stuff like that. But, you know, signing bonuses, you never would have heard that in, you know, years past. But now they're offering signing bonuses in the manufacturing space. And I'm not talking like $100 to $200 or $500. I'm talking thousands of dollars. They're offering signing bonuses, especially if it's a tool and die person. And then, you know, a lot of them are doing referrals within their company. If they give referrals, that person that does a referral will get, you know, will get money. And again, it's not just a few hundred dollars. They're offering a substantial amount of money to offer a referral and hope that that person comes on board and stays.
Hi, and welcome to the Zen and the Art of Manufacturing podcast, where we help manufacturers create calm and improve flow. Today, our guest is David Klotz, who is the president of the PMA. So, David, thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. So David and I have known each other for a while through PMA, but David also worked at Plex, and he also was the president of a software company for about 4 years as well. So long experience in manufacturing, and now has a very unique position being the president of the PMA, which is Precision Metal Forming Association, which has, how many members do you guys have?
Over 850 members in mainly North America, but some locations in Europe and Asia as well.
Wow. So it gives you a pretty unique point of view on what's happening in manufacturing today, I would think.
Yep, it does. Yep. And then our sizes of companies are, you know, mainly family owned companies, metal stampers, a lot of times, you know, second, third, fourth generation members. Some are owned by private equity, but most of them are all family owned companies, and anywhere from, you know, $5 million companies all the way up to got a few that are over half a billion in size. So a lot of different variations. A lot of our members supply automotive industry, but also supply many other industries like off highway, heavy truck, medical, aerospace, and military. So definitely a variety of industries, also commercial, construction, you know, appliance industry is a huge area as well for our members. So.
Yeah, makes sense. So how did you end up going from, you know, the software side of the world to being the president of a trade association?
Yeah, my father owned a metal stamping company in South Bend, Indiana. So I grew up in this environment. Summer jobs, and I used to go to the office with my dad and just do work around the office for him when I was a kid. And then when I got older, worked in the tool and die shop area, and then out in the press room, just cleaning dies to, you know, helping out wherever I could over the summers. So I grew up in this environment. And then after I graduated in college, I moved up. We had a plant up in Troy, Michigan, and that's what took me up to here in the Detroit area. We had another division up here. And so it was a manufacturing company as well. I moved around in operations, purchasing, all different areas, and focused in sales. And then my background's accounting, so on the financial side. We sold the company in 2006. I transitioned. I was heavy involved in our IT side at our family business. I implemented a couple of ERP systems throughout the process. So, you know, setting up a, you know, bill of materials and process routings. And so I had an opportunity to go work at Plex. When they hired me for sales, but they weren't sure if I was going to make it there, because they're going to put me right away into in implementation, since I knew a lot of this. And so luckily sales worked out, and I did sales and then ran a sales team there at Plex. And then the last 4 or 5 years I was at Tebus North America, running basically the main office here in North America, largest subsidiary for Tebus. Tebus is a German software company, and ran North America for them. And we mainly focused on engineering software, CAD/CAM, reverse engineering. And we were heavy in the aerospace industry, and then a lot of tool die and mold shops. And then how I got into PMA, I've been involved with PMA over the years, heavily involved with the local district here in Michigan. I ran the district as a chair. I was the treasurer. I was golf chair. So I was got active there, networked with a lot of members. And then when I moved to Plex, I got more involved on the national level and got on some of the boards and executive committees. and just knew my, knew a lot of people, sold a lot of software to a lot of the members, and it was a great network. And there was a transition of a new president that was going out, and they'd hired somebody and it did not work out. And so there was approach of maybe, how about you run the association? So we had some talks, and now I'm here after starting in 2019, a little over 2 years now running the association.
Yeah, and a crazy couple of years too with COVID.
Correct.
And so being the president of an organization like this, like I said, gives you an interesting, gives you a view into a lot of manufacturers, like you said, 850 members. One of the biggest things that people across the board are struggling with today is attracting talent, hiring people, right? Whether they're young people, you know, looking to get into manufacturing, or experienced folks, the labor market's super tight. How, like, what are you seeing out there today in your membership, and how are they dealing with this?
Yeah, it's a struggle for them quite a bit. I mean, obviously, it's happening in all different industries, and in the restaurant industry and stuff like that, trying to find talent. I think it's been very hard, especially for the last 6 months, because most of our members, they stayed open last year because a lot of their businesses were essential. And if they were doing anything with the appliance industry, they never stopped slowing down. Automotive, they slowed down for maybe 2-3 months, but then ever since the fall and this winter, automotive's just been on a huge increase, and been very busy. So trying to find those, find the talent has been very hard. Having that aid that was coming from the state and federal, it was making it easy for individuals to stay home. Also, some individuals were staying home because, maybe they didn't have opportunities for daycare, and because of COVID, they couldn't do daycare, and so they had to stay home. So there's a lot of different issues why the workforce, but, and also there's been talks about fraud happening in Michigan, Ohio with the unemployment. So it's been interesting that, it's great that these, a lot of these states are now ending the federal aid. And so hopefully this will get people back to, getting back in, opportunities to get back to work. But I've talked to, companies. I've been touring, visiting a lot of members over the last, I haven't really stopped. I did visit members last year when they, if they were available and open for me to visit, I came and visited them. But last 3-5 months, I've been really traveling quite a bit, visiting them. And it's attractive because, hey, if $100, it wasn't being any motivation, but now you're talking $1,000 or $1,500 for someone over maybe a year time. If that person stays, that's substantial. And so that's, and if they can refer a friend and that person, and that's a good employee, then they're most likely that, they would look to, take advantage of that, having that person come on board because that person knows them and if that person's a good employee. So, but other ways that they're doing, I talked to a member in Ohio just recently, went on a visit, and they're doing some creative things of what they're doing. They're doing a billboard off a major highway in Ohio. And this company's not big. They're, 100, 200 employees, maybe I think they have 3 locations. So they're not a huge company. But they're doing a billboard on the side, advertising for them and that they're hiring. That's huge. They're doing sponsorships and signage at, Little League baseball games. And then their local racetrack is just opened up and started doing racing. And they've got advertising there as well to try to attract people. So it's and they actually just did a TV ad, a TV commercial. And I'm sure that, the news has heard that, the workforce has heard. So they were interested in doing a segment on them. Hasn't heard the results on that, but that is definitely a creative way to kind of get out there.
Yeah. You don't hear about that. I mean, news segments, no. Sure. Yeah. You don't hear about it very often. Where I am, there's hiring signs literally everywhere. You can make $17 an hour bagging groceries now. I think I told you that story before.
Yeah, and I think it's tough right now because there was enough jobs for some of these large manufacturers, and that let's say here in Detroit, you have your Ford and GM and Chrysler, and you had people that went to go work there, but then there's enough jobs out there for like these small manufacturers to compete. Now they're all competing for the same people because they're also looking for people as well.
Yeah. So what are companies doing when they're short staffed? If it's hard to hire people, like how do they handle this stuff?
Well, some are going through temp agencies. That's a short-term solution. Or they're basically, I've talked to members where they're declining work, new orders, new jobs. Had one member in South Carolina turn away almost $5 million worth of business because he had nowhere to run it, which is a shame. I mean, he would have loved to take the business, but I think, when they wanted this part and the turnaround and the lack of workforce is they turned that work around. So I'm hearing more and more of those kind of stories.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, it's like terrible. It doesn't really make sense. I guess you can only do so much overtime, right? There's only 24 hours in the day. Right. Are people automating at all? Like, are you hearing that?
They are. So on my tours, you're seeing a lot more automation. Some of them are making their own cells, but a lot of times they go out and get automated cells that they're basically where it might have been a manual person maybe moving that part to let's say to an automated cell that's maybe putting, other value added welds and, maybe an added screw there. That's always been in place, but maybe now they're adding that robot to move that part over to that cell. And because it's, now the cost of the robots have decreased and it's just the reliability of that robot. So this one customer one member in Chicago, they had about 5 lines that they had robots already in place, and they were looking at 5 more that they were putting robots in place in the next 6 months. And that's just not that one member. I'm seeing that quite a bit. So the price of robots is going down. And so when they can, I mean, obviously with material handling and moving parts around, that's where you still need that human interaction, per se. But, and if there's a process where they can, a lot of them have done automated cells, like I mentioned, in that, station, 5 or 6 station spot. So that's not just, but getting those parts into that station is where they're trying to save that time and effort.
Yeah, we see a lot of the same. I mean, I probably don't talk to as many as you do, unfortunately, but a lot of people looking at automation, although supply chain issues are slowing that down a little bit. And then the labor market on the system integrator side to install it, it's like this terrible vicious circle, right?
Right.
But yeah. So how, if I'm having trouble finding people, how do I make sure I keep my folks then? Because the last thing I want is, losing key people so that I have issues delivering on the orders I have accepted. What are people doing around that?
Yeah, I think many of our members have a great, like I said, their family businesses, multiple generations. So there's a very good, strong culture. I mean, they have a lot of employees that are, they're 20, 30, 40 years. And I mean, it's amazing. When I toured these people, they introduced me to some key, employees and just, the passion they have. So I think, once they become, once they be part of that company, that the culture is very strong there and a family atmosphere where you may not get that at maybe a large company or a large manufacturer, you get that feel. And, most of the times you're not dealing, with the unions, and unions may not be involved. So you've got a little bit more flexibility there. But, what I've heard and seen is if they've got an employee and they can use that person stays from after 90 days, they usually stay. And I'll tell you, our members, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but you can make a great career in manufacturing.
Yeah.
And if you're not sure what you want to do and you're maybe not a great student and, maybe college isn't the way to go, manufacturing, I mean, our members, if you come on board, they'll pay for your schooling, your 2-year and 4-year degree. Obviously now there's some commitment after that they have to stay with the company for a certain amount of time, but they will pay for education. So, I mean, that's a huge benefit for, somebody coming on and not be debt free, can work there, can go to school and work and be debt free and come out. And now maybe you're in a role of a tool and die side and tool and die maker. But again, people think, okay, I don't want to be moving parts my whole life. And that's not the case. If you make your career and you get an education, there's opportunities in engineering, sales. One of our very big members, great active member, heavy involved in PMA. Their current CEO right now came as a tool. He was a tool and die at the company 30 some years ago. And he had no relation, no family relation. He was just a tool and die guy. Now he's the CEO of the company and is running either at 4 locations, over $70 million in sales. And so, and that you're talking about, opportunities there. he just took advantage of over the years.
Yeah, I see that a lot. We work with a lot of plant managers, directors of manufacturing, VP of manufacturing, and I would say the majority, at least 50 to 60%, the majority of those folks came up through the ranks. They didn't come in sideways with a MBA or something and get to become the VP of manufacturing.
Yeah. And a lot of times, maybe the owner doesn't have a succession plan. Maybe there's no, siblings that want to, kids that want to take over the facility and in the company. And so now there might be somebody within the company that's got a passion for the manufacturing that knows it, has an opportunity maybe to buy into the, to ownership there.
Yeah. So you can find yourself, I mean, our audience is like, people in manufacturing that have drank the Kool-Aid and really, love it. But, for anybody who's new to it, yeah, you could find yourself owning a pretty nice size manufacturing company at this point, because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of baby boomers and kind of older Gen X's that are owning and running manufacturing companies where the kids don't want to take it over. There is no succession plan, right? And your only way out is typically private equity or something like that. So,
and I think this was the case for this one CEO that, again, started at Tool and Die, and 30 years later, he's the CEO of a very successful company that they're in all different industries. So during COVID, they were affected, but not as much. So, I mean, I think they gained actually 10% of new business just because they were so diverse. But amazing story. And then I think what you're also seeing in the training side is, as I grew up and Brian, as you grew up, there was job shop, car shop, let's say at the high school level. Now that a lot of that went away. We're seeing more of that coming back, but a lot of apprenticeship programs are starting up. Obviously there's a focus, I think, after the last administration, how we need to increase manufacturing in the U.S. And so a lot of those schools that I think a lot, they got hit really hard in 08 and 09. And so a lot of those schools closed, and now a lot of them are, coming back up. And so there's a lot of different programs out there that students can take advantage of and get involved in for that training.
They don't have like any wood shop, car shop, anything in high school anymore?
Not many places, maybe in some of the small rural areas, but not, not in a lot of different areas that you see that ain't much more. And I know my high school, they got rid of it years ago. And they bring it on to insurance reasons or cost issue and stuff like that. So now some of that focus, let's say, that went more to the others. I know there's robot competitions, so there's more engineering focus than maybe, let's say, when we were in high school or when I was around high school. That was, now there's more engineering focus on the robot side, which is great. But a lot of those local schools, but we do see a big pickup in areas, especially here in Michigan and Cleveland, a lot more. Apprenticeships are starting up, especially for military people that are coming out of the military, opportunities where they can get, PMA is now partnering with some of those opportunities, and also, corrections area. PMA is connected with a group in Ohio that's with the correction side. We've got a couple members that have hired employee, people from that corrections side. They're coming out and they've been, trying to find a new way, a new start and an opportunity to come, work at a manufacturing facility.
Yeah, the robot stuff is interesting because, I mean, that has to overlap with shop class if you're building them. I mean, if people donate FANUC robots, I don't know if FANUC donates robots so that they can program them or something similar, or like the Universal Robotics, but, building any of those like robotics team things. Yeah, I've seen those because, I guess that is how they're coming back. So. It's a good way to get into things, and that can really be what manufacturing is for you, depending on the role you take. So,
but I think the training is, once they stay in after that 90 days, they usually stay, and they in our culture, and like some of our members have their own clinic and health clinic on site, and depending on the size of the company, and so there's a lot of benefits that they have, and they can attend that along with all family. So they don't have to worry about going to another urgent care or go to a hospital. They've got a clinic right there that's right there for the employees and employees' families. So a lot of different benefits that our employees, and then obviously the success of the company, you can definitely make a good career out in manufacturing and good living.
Yeah. What so you talked about it a little bit, through on the supply chain side of things, how is the membership dealing with things like the chip shortage, whether it affects them directly or indirectly, since a lot of them are in the automotive supply chain. How are people dealing with that stuff, or steel, the cost of steel and things like that going up, the shortages there?
I think this last year and a half to 2 years has been one of the hardest times for our members, because you had COVID and you're like all companies, you're rolling out new protocols. They're staying open because they're essential, but then what are the protocols if someone gets COVID? And you know, all those different rules in place, and obviously it was per state, and PMA was trying to be a focus on that and try to educate our members as best we could on what we knew from our DC team. We did advocacy webinars once a week, but then it went to every other week and then once a month as COVID throughout the last year. But so we were trying to educate our members because it was a tough time for them. But then now, okay, you're now what's happening is in the fall and winter, numbers were increasing, releases were increasing so they're working second, third shifts. And then all of a sudden now steel supply is an issue, because the steel industry, what happened is once COVID hit, they shut some of the furnaces down and there was less supply of steel out there. It wasn't there right at, and it wasn't initially, but over time now that lot of supply was getting eaten up. And so that has driven pricing. Our members are paying almost at least double, sometimes triple what they were paying early last year. And so the steel company now is starting up more of the furnaces again. But again, for the steel side, but this is great. They're charging they're getting great money for the steel. And there's no issue really on their side. But the steel consumers, like our stampers, there's not enough out there. And so and they're paying higher prices. Maybe not now, but over time, those prices are going to, those jobs could be moved to overseas because we could be being priced out of the market. Most of our members are getting those increases from the steel supplier, and then they have been moving it on to their customers. Almost most of the times I've heard, all those price increases have been moved on to the customer. And now what happens, that's just going to trickle down to us consumers. You know, if we're purchasing that car or that refrigerator, now we're spending, 10 or 15% more or 20% more on that vehicle or that appliance.
Yeah.
So it's really affecting. And so what's going to happen is next time, that customer goes to that stamper and say, okay, how about the pricing for this next run for the next year or 2 years? Well, this is the price we're at. Well, that's too expensive. We're going to outsource it, or we're going to outsource it to overseas or to Mexico or China. And so it's a real concern. And then the chip shortage is affected on members. They're basically, if they're supplying, let's say, the F-150 right now, and Ford shuts down any production on the F-150, that trickles down that, they're not sending releases or any, volume to their customer. So it's definitely trickling down. So we've seen customers shut down. We've seen, obviously, you see Nissan and other companies that are shutting down for, multiple weeks. And that's now going to be coming down to, our members as well. And it has been over the last few months.
How does everybody deal with that from an employee perspective? So if let's say you're supplying parts to the F-150 and, you don't need to build up inventory or anything, and they pause for 2 or 3 weeks, what do you do with your people?
And it goes back to, one of our members in Tennessee, I just went and saw, they just got, they're back to almost fully staffed. And then now these, as you mentioned, these setbacks of these releases. So now they're talking on the week I was there on that Friday, they were talking about maybe laying off 25, 30 people, and they did not want to do it. But there was, obviously you can move them to different other production lines and stuff like that. But if there's nothing else, the problem is if you lay them off, you're probably not going to get those 25, 30 people back. So they were really struggling what they were going to do.
What's the expectation from, like Nissan or Ford, when they start back up again, for you keeping, I guess you have to keep up with parts delivery and march in step with them. You don't have a choice. Is that right?
Correct. So one of our members supplies Honda. When Honda's kind of shut down for a week, they kept continue running.
Yeah.
It was like a week, 2 weeks later, they were able to kind of slow down. This one member that was supplying Honda, he said they've been going, working, 12, 14 hours for a while. So it gave them a little break, a rest, but they're concerned that these shutdowns are going to continue happening. But usually a lot of times they won't shut down the week that, let's say, Nissan or the OEM shuts down. They'll run that production, and then maybe the following week or 2 weeks, they'll slow their kind of production run and maybe give some employees some time. But in the fall and the winter, they were working tons of overtime. Now I think that's more, they're back to more 8 hours right now, 8 to 10 hours.
What do you think is going to happen with the chip shortage? Like, where do you see that going? I know you guys are, the PMA is pretty plugged into what happens in DC. I don't know if that's a governmental thing or what. Like, where do you see this going?
It's tough because a lot of, I mean, the majority of the chips are coming from Taiwan. It's not something that you can just set up a plant and make, start making these chips tomorrow. And the problem is, if say the government gives a company to, you know, start a plant, you've still got that startup time. And once you've got, you know, if you're running those, making those chips here in the United States, what's going to happen is, you know, yeah, that might help the, you know, supply for the short term, but then, you know, China will just say, okay, I'm just going to lower the chip price another 25 cents. And, you know, then that company's, you know, will be unable to compete a little bit with that. So it's a tough gamble. I know, you know, Europe is, I guess, BMW, I heard, you know, made some bad rumblings with the Taiwanese and was demanding these chips. And I guess they didn't fare well with them. So BMW is suffering right now. And so it's not just in the United States, it's Europe all over because of, you know, and again, I think I talked to you when we talked on the phone about this, you know, a couple weeks ago, when the global supply chain's working, it's great, works great. But then whenever you have these kind of supply issues like the chip shortage or, you know, the tsunami in Japan and earthquake, you know, I mean, how that affected, you know, that was 3-4 years ago now, that really affects, you know, those, you know, I remember when dies were still sitting in Japan and Toyota and Honda couldn't even run because those dies were sitting there. So now they've changed their processes where they have a die there in Japan, and then also they have a die here in the United States. So they're making duplicates. So there's an extra cost there. But, you know, it's this, you know, the supply chain, is this chip is going to continue to be around for the next, I'd say, another year.
I wonder what the cost difference is, really. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a political discussion or a made in America. Well, maybe it could be a made in America discussion. But at some point, like, don't you want to not be beholden to other people and, like, have the ability to make this stuff here? Right. And if it's only, like, a buck, like, I mean, do I really care if this thing's $800 versus $801? Probably not.
Right. You know, we're big advocates of, you know, PMA supports a lot of, you know, bring manufacturing back in the United States more and more. And I know the last administrator was, you know, was pushing that big time, and we were very supportive on that and our members. So, and there was opportunities or jobs came in, the new, you know, USMCA/old NAFTA agreement, it did help some U.S. companies, but it's also, if you really look at it, it helped Mexico quite a bit. And what China's doing now is, you know, what I heard is now China's just buying companies in Mexico now. And then they're, you know, and now those parts are coming up from Mexico to U.S. are really, you know, Chinese-based companies. So they've been doing a huge buying spree in the last year, 2 years down in Mexico.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've heard that from our customers too, that when Trump did the tariffs, they started moving things to Mexico out of China.
Right.
Because they weren't there. It didn't come here, it came to Mexico, which is better because it's closer, right? It's easier to drive across the border than it is to send a tanker ship or container ship from China to here. And speaking of that too, do you see issues? You remember seeing issues with that? So like the congestion at the ports and getting things unloaded and stuff being stuck on container ships?
Yeah. I was just out in Huntington Beach a few weeks ago, and you could see out to the ocean, I counted 15 freighters just lined up. And from, I saw one of our members, and the report is it's out 30 miles long out in the ocean, just freighters lined up to come in. Because the ports are, you know, I'm saying due to COVID, we can only unload so many shifts at a time, or they have only limited number of employees around because of COVID. So they're only can handle so many shifts right now. And so, I mean, it's, you know, you see shortage everywhere of you know, appliance, you know, in Home Depot, they're running low on different areas. It goes down to, a golf club that I'm at. I walk in and there's two golf bags in there and that's it. And they're like, where's all the golf bags? They're on a boat waiting to come over. So it's trickling down to all different areas.
Yeah, I recently bought a new house and I've been trying to get appliances for it, some new appliances, and it's impossible. Same thing with like I needed to get a riding mower, same deal. Like the amount of effort that I had to put in to find these things is just insane.
But I saying if you want a washer and dryer, I heard if you ordered, like you said, a refrigerator, you want it maybe white or something. Well, maybe they only have stainless. You're going to take that, or it's whatever you can grab your hands on. And yeah, we're in the process of remodeling PMA's headquarters. We're going to start August, hopefully August 1st. And we just met with the builder and same thing, appliance industries. And we want to get those on order as soon as possible because, we have until November, December, but we may have to wait that long.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully you won't be dealing with the lumber issue either when that remodel of your office. So hopefully that's going to start to drop pretty soon. So just to kind of, I always like to ask a couple questions at the end of this that really have nothing to do with what we talked about. And one of them, because I always get some interesting answers, is what's something that you learned as a kid that still sticks with you and you use today?
I think, respecting, I was just respecting individuals and respecting, especially authority and respecting, management. I think that's always been something I learned coaching, respecting coaches. I played a lot of sports in growing up, and it was just respecting your coaches. And and you see it, you would see kids that maybe didn't, and it was just something that I've kind of always learned. And growing up and just respecting the people that are above you, just it's, it makes me, being around that environment a lot better, and it's just better for our, community as in general.
Yeah, it's a good point. Respect for people. The respect for people seems to be lacking. I don't know if it happened during COVID, but it's gotten a little crazy lately.
I'm flying. I'm starting to. Yeah, I'm starting to fly on planes now. And they're just the, people. I mean, obviously, everyone knows you got to wear a mask on the plane. And then you just see people that do it, and you see the stewards come up and say, "Could you put your mask on?" And just the argument or the disagreement on it. It's just unbelievable. I mean, you knew you're getting on that plane and have to wear a mask, so just do it.
Yeah, and you had to check the box like four times that you'll wear the mask when you checked in. Yeah, it's
Right.
like you agreed to this quite a bit. Just do it. Shut up and do
Right.
it. Where do you go to kind of learn new things and keep up on what's happening in manufacturing? Maybe that's kind of a trick question for you because you got an inside track on a lot of things that most people don't, but.
It is nice that I get to tour these, and I mean, I've seen, a new, I mean, I thought I've seen a lot of metal stamping processes, but then I saw one, where this one member was putting washer lines behind every large press line. It's because, most companies, their washing line was, their washing department was on the other side. So they'd wash the parts because a lot of times they had to be cleaned immediately to prevent rust. And they were, a lot of them always have it on a different end of the building, and they, have high lows going back and forth. Well, this company was putting them, washing lines at each line. And so right after the part gets off the, right comes off the press, it goes through the washing line and eliminates that material handling and efficiencies industry. So yeah, it's great. I go visit these members. I see a lot of neat things of the manufacture process. We have our big trade show coming up in Fabtech. We are gonna, it's, we're excited. It's going to be on in Chicago, September 13th to the 16th, yet in person. We're so excited.
When is it?
Obviously, September 13th to the 16th in Chicago. And it brings the welding association and welding members, the fabrication members, obviously a metal stamping, tube and pipe, and also coders and painters and coat lines. It brings all those industries together. Every other year, it's in Chicago. We're excited with the new restrictions. A lot of them are being lifted. We're really excited to finally have our, it's going to be basically, we've said it was going to be, it's the first manufacturing, trade show live since COVID happened. And so we're excited. Usually it brings around 50,000 people attendance at McCormick every year or every other year. This year it will probably be less, but it's going to be the right people that come, probably the right buyers or owners or upper management probably will be there. And so we're excited that, can get back. So that FabTech is great to go back to, to go there to, walk the show, see new technologies and see what's different processes. So that's always been, we do it every year, every other year in Chicago, and then it's either Atlanta or Vegas on the opposite years. And that's probably one of the best ways to kind of see what the new stuff, new technology out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good show. I've been there. I didn't realize you guys were doing that in person. That's going to be very cool. I'm going to have to go to that actually. Trudging around McCormick Place.
I think people are excited to finally get back. That's the feedback we're getting. Obviously, there's some people that were still reservations. A lot of them are, some of them, the ones that still have reservations, they're more international companies.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them maybe just said it. I know one company set a guideline that says, we're just not doing any trade shows in 2021. So they're not even doing any in Europe or Asia or anything. So they just made a decision. But some of our individual companies are real excited to have a booth, get back and talk to people. And the capital equipment, and like you said, things are opening up on the software side. I think capital equipment has been very busy, and that opened up. They did have a slow period there with COVID, but once production started picking up, new presses, new feed lines, new conveyors, all that was opening up. So a lot of our members are, capital equipment side have been very busy quoting.
Yeah.
And people are purchasing, buying.
Yeah.
With the low interest rates right now, it's people are taking advantage of that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that about wraps it up for today. Anything else that you want to add or talk about before we jump off?
No, I appreciate the support you do for PMA. And and if anybody has any questions, feel free, they can reach out to me and the organization. We offer a lot of member benefits for our members. One of the things I really liked, we brought on 100 new members last year during COVID. So we were super excited about that. We're continuing to growing and adding members, even though the stamping side, a lot of things are moving to the EV route, but a lot of our members are pivoting that way.
Yeah.
In that side, I think, gas engine and transmission side is still going to be around for, many, many more years, because the EV market is just, there's not an infrastructure yet. So that's going to take a long time to do that. And pricing needs to still, it needs to still be reduced. So there's, and then, like I said, a lot of our members are more diverse in other areas. And like I said, off highway, agricultural and other different industries, but we offer a lot of member benefits, and I'm just honored to be part of and running the association.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's a good group. All right. Well, thank you. So this has been Zen and the Art of Manufacturing. We were with David Kloss today, the president of PMA, Precision Metal Forming Association. So thanks again, David.
Thanks again. Thanks, Brian. Have a good weekend.